Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, Tony from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to have you here on this wonderful, delightful evening. Commentary on the weather, things of this nature.
Hello.
Hey, Mike, you got to tell me when you move microphones, because you loud.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. All right, here we go on the show tonight. So here's the thing, is we're sitting about an hour before the show starts, and Andrew Carson goes, "Hey, I got Pope style." And I was amazed. So anyway, we're going to have some Pope style. Andrew Carson, can I have a preview on your Pope style?
It's about shepherds.
Okay. Pope style on... What do you... Why is that funny?
Because you asked for a preview, and he gave a general topic.
Yeah. No, that's true.
You said, "Hey, man, give me the preview." He goes, "It's shepherds."
You know, I haven't talked to a guy ever in my whole life where I've been like, "Hey, man, what do you do for a living?" "A shepherd." You know what I'm saying? Like, they call sheep farmers or something. Farmer in general covers it, but no one identifies themselves as a shepherd anymore. You think it's because it inherently holds too much weight?
It's a possibility.
Because of all the historical text?
If I were a sheep herder or sheep raised man, I have no idea.
No, Mike, it's just because you don't know any shepherds. I'm pretty sure there's like parts of the world where there are shepherds.
There are people here in Iowa that raise sheep that I would never think of them as shepherds.
Yeah, I don't think they think of themselves either. That's kind of a small... I don't think it's too weighty. I think it's too small.
It's just
like
niche,
a farmer.
A niche market.
Like, no, I do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Dan, you're a pastor. Have you ever referred to yourself as a shepherd?
I have.
But not like, "What do you do?" "I'm a shepherd."
Yeah. That'd
only be when awesome. I needed people
you
listen
need
to me.
You need to start doing that.
I'm the shepherd. Sheep.
Please start sheep introducing yourself as Dan Hudson, shepherd.
I'm the medium good shepherd. See, it doesn't have a good name to it.
I am the somewhat not horrible shepherd.
Let's see. So if I search job opening as a shepherd.
Is there a LinkedIn thing for shepherds?
No, shoot. These are all, doggone, it's the names of the places. Job openings, Shepherd of the Hills Church. Yeah. Employment working at the Shepherd Center.
That's because there's no shepherds out there.
That's the deal. People stop calling themselves shepherd because they can't get a freaking job without finding a whole bunch of places they don't want to work.
Yep. Hey, man, that's the comic we need to create. We need to create the dude that legitimately raises sheep looking for a job interview as a shepherd, and he keeps running into churches. Keeps walking in. "Yeah, I'm an actual shepherd." They're like, "Oh, so how many times have you been a pastor? Have you been a pastor before?" He goes, No, I actually just legitimately raise sheep, and I'm not a shepherd."
Hey, listen, if you want to make an unfunny comic, you can do that by yourself.
Hey, man, that's going to be funny.
I feel like there's no reason
that's
going to
blow up, Mike. That's going to blow up, Mike. People are going to love that.
Hey, so I started to type it. I was going to search it differently and search, "I want to work as a shepherd." And the four options that Google gives you as a suggestion are, "I want to work as a Disney princess." "I want to work as a call boy." Is that a dirty
thing? I think
thing?
That's what you think it is.
Oh, my.
They make phone calls?
Yeah. No.
I can call them for you.
Wait, now hold on.
Operator?
The third one is, "I want to work as a receptionist."
Right.
That's the third one. And "I want to work as a photographer."
Those are very different from each other, all of them.
And all not shepherds.
Absolutely
yeah. not.
Yeah, boy, that's... We
should turn this into a comic.
I kind of want to...
It's going to be awesome.
Wait, hold on. And then if you put in an S, it changes to, "I want to work as a spy." "I want to work as a secret agent."
What yeah. nine-year-old got their hands on Google?
"I want to work on a cruise ship."
Here's the deal. When you Google search, "You're going to work as a spy," you are now the worst spy ever. You have basically just thrown out any evidence that you could go incognito on anything. "I'm applying to be a spy."
I want to work as a... I was starting to slowly type out shepherd, and this is where I think Google's just phoning it in, because I want to work as a she, and then the options are shellfish, sheep song, sheet on my bed. And the algorithms aren't put together right.
"I want to work as a sheet on my bed." Hey, did you know that the tag always goes up in the upper left-hand corner?
I thought it was the bottom right.
No, on the fitted sheet, upper left.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you always put it on the upper left, it will fit correctly all the time. You'll never get that short side and go, "Crap, now I got to start all over again."
It took me until I was 23 years old to finally buy a fitted sheet.
What do you mean? You just put a flat sheet on there and called it what it was?
That's it.
Hey, Hey, so hold on. Then I'm going to drop this. But if you, careersearch.com under shepherd says, career advice on how to become a shepherd. A lot of the time, we smugly think that we know what a career is all about. Popular culture leads us to believe that we understand the ins and outs of a job or career pretty well. In the case of the shepherd, this smug, preconceived notion of what a shepherd does is completely accurate. Indeed, shepherds are still keeping track of sheep just like they always have. here we go. Career facts. Shepherds have been watching over sheep for several thousand years. Often the image of the shepherd is that of a protector, and that is accurate. But to be completely clear, shepherds are paid to keep an eye over an investment. Or if they are in the shepherd biz for themselves, the sheep they are watching over are cash money in the bank. I love this guy. Thus, the shepherd might be using the sheep for their wool or their milk or often their meat. You ever drink sheep's milk?
I would if it was offered to me.
I would do the same.
Okay. So keep in mind that being a shepherd does not mean hanging out with sheep all day and being their friend. Every now and then, the grim reaper comes for one of your furry friends. Much of the fear that shepherds have concerning their flocks comes from predators. Wolves, dingoes, and other predators find sheep to be rather tasty. Thus, they are the historic enemy of the shepherd. Career opportunities and job outlook, unknown. Today, sheep herding is more of a regional activity, with much of shepherding taking place in just a few regions across the world, such as Scotland and Israel. This fact means that landing a job as a shepherd might be a little tricky, but one never knows. What does the future hold for the shepherd? This ancient job has seen a lot of change since its inception thousands of years ago. Whether or not we'll continue to exist and thrive is an excellent question. The odds are that the shepherd will be with us in some form for quite some time to come. Average salary. Salary can vary greatly between shepherds who have their own flocks and shepherds who are working for others. In general, however, one should not expect to build a shepherding empire. When is the last time you've heard, oh, that guy made all his money in shepherding? He's a real jerk, too. Oh, man, he's talking to your wife. career training and qualifications, you should probably be like both sheep and dogs. This is usually a skill that one picks up on the job. That's careersearch.com, shepherd.
I feel like I'm qualified.
That's awesome.
I'm a fired up.
Hey, man, I like that some guy did that. I mean, he's got nothing better to do but create a career search page on shepherding. I mean, you're really scraping the barrel for web hits, picking up a few cents per click on, like, on the shepherding page.
Like running a live from the Path Radio Show.
Yeah. That's weird. Okay. Anyway. Billy Graham, the Bible is the most important book, and Christians need to understand it. Sorry, that was that article I was looking for. That states the obvious. All right, here we go. Hey, Boova, did you go see that Deadpool movie?
Yeah.
I've seen many a warning not to see that Deadpool movie. What is your reaction to it?
Yeah, don't go.
Oh.
I went and saw it thinking to myself that it was not going to be as bad as everyone said it was going to be, just like everyone said it was going to be. Yeah, no, agreed. So ultimately, 6 months ago, I feel like this would not have bothered me, but just where God's got me in the last couple of months, it really bothered me, because there's some parts of the movie, like, it's an awesome movie from a superhero perspective, and I loved it. I thought it was great. But there's way too much stuff that you just don't need to see. There's a whole strip club scene that I literally thought it was going to be maybe 20 seconds, and it wouldn't be that bad. And, you know, I expected a sex scene in it, and I thought it was maybe going to be a couple seconds, and for some reason I justified that. But the sex scene ended up being, like, almost 2 minutes worth of doing that. And, like, no holds barred on this thing. Like,
that's generally how long it takes, Boo.
Why?
Really?
Why is this? Why is this the deal?
So I'm thinking
my scene would go much longer.
moving past this conversation.
Shoot.
So, back in Jua.
Hey, Ben, you should play your cards last. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. 45 minutes is about me, too. Right on, everybody else.
So, yeah, it ended up being...
My community is supposed to refine me. Thanks, boys. Way too short. Go on, Boomer.
Should I even light the candles this time? Or I can make some popcorn.
I made a whole CD, but apparently I needed the one song. Wait, man, that's terrible.
What comes after YMC? Hold on, baby.
I'll show you next time.
That's a teaser.
Talk to me in a couple hours.
Downhill.
So
anyway,
that's
why we can't see the Deadpool movie.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. So you watch the scene, and I'm sure the people that were expecting it to be that kind of movie and didn't have any reason to think that was bad thought it was great. But, like, when you're watching that, like, I legitimately found myself looking away and wanting to leave the movie theater. Like I said, 6 months ago, I would not have noticed that. I would have just watched it and been, okay, well, this is just some of the consequences of an R-rated movie. But I watched it, and I was generally disgusted. I'm just like, man, I have no desire to sit, like, weirdly in my life, if you guys know me. Just a weird place. So, didn't want to watch that, looked away. And then it came to another, you know, strip club scene, and I thought to myself, like, man, another one? Like, is this really that necessary? It's gratuitous, and, you know, I expected the language, and I expected all that stuff, but just, it was way too much. And
I was watching Risen while you were watching that. Do I bring that up now?
Really?
Do you see my halo?
You're so much better than me, Dan.
Holy's the word, but
Dan, you are so set apart. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We should make a comic strip on how crappy Booba is. That would be awesome.
Yeah, probably. He can talk about how sometimes he tries to be a shepherd and then ends up taking job applications to a church.
Dan, did you really see that Risen movie?
Yes, I did.
Is it pretty good?
Wait, was this the one where it
was there any weird sex scenes?
Yeah.
Investigation into or whatever?
Yeah. There are some things I really like about it, and there are some things, I think probably one of the hardest things in all of the world to try to film as a director, to direct, would be how do you represent Jesus?
Right.
You know, because we all have our vision of what that would look like, you know? And I'm not saying he did good or bad, it was just different than I would do it. Or even more so, how do you picture the disciples post-resurrection being interrogated by a Roman soldier? You know, some of the old school mysterious, you know, pious stuff came in once in a while. They just had this mysterious, oh, we all just love each other now, you know.
Right.
And I was thinking, no, you jump up and say, hey, I don't give a rip. I don't even know what's happening. All I know is he's alive, you know. That's what I'd be doing. That's how I envision it, you know. But so I don't want to say it was bad. I enjoyed it. I would recommend people go see it. But it probably won't exactly match your imagination of what some of those scenes, you know.
But it's not in the same league as like the Noah movie where you'd be like, man, this thing is just off the bandwagon crazy.
They did a really good job of having a non-biblical person. The Roman soldiers, like, it's totally from his perspective, and like you miss the crucifixion. He shows up and it's like, why don't you go take we got a crucifixion? Why don't you go break his legs? Let's end this thing. So he just shows up at the end. So you don't even go through the whole crucifixion, and then a lot of it is truly, it's almost like a Bible meets CSI. You know, it's like them going, okay, we got some people saying he's resurrected. Some people, you know, obviously the disciples stole the body. Let's see what really happened. You know? And they're just trying to investigate. Well, where'd the body go? You know, and they're digging at bodies and they're trying. You know, there's like somebody's lying here, and they're just trying to get to the facts. And so I don't know. It was decent. I mean, yeah, I would recommend it. There was no time. Almost every one of those movies, you go, man, this is so unbiblical. Like you said, you know, rock people. What?
Right.
I never thought that. I just thought I saw that differently.
Yeah,
that was the only.
It's just
thing
a perspective change. Kind
yeah,
of deal.
I don't think I've ever seen like a Bible movie that I've thought that way.
Yeah,
that I didn't think that's not in the Bible.
Right.
They're showing this thing in the theaters.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right, so Booba saw the posturing movie from...
I'm a heathen.
Yeah, that seems terrible. All right.
Dan has recently rebuked me for my ways.
That's right. He's risen, Booba. Risen indeed.
Okay, all right. Let's see. So Andrew, yeah? Tell me. So now that we've kind of margined out what it's like to be a modern-day shepherd, let's hear your Pope style on shepherding. So here's the deal. Someone, probably multiple people, have gotten together in conspiracy style to claim that Andrew is the Pope, and the only way to get people from off his lawn is for him to give some sort of Pope style advice that is relevant to their lives and to his as well, so that they can go about their day. So Andrew, how do you get these people all in your lawn? What's your Pope style advice?
So here's the deal. Okay, I was watching myself some television, and I was watching an old show called Stargate Atlantis, and one of the characters in the show is named John Shepherd. Okay? And so he's like, you know, this military leader guy. He's like, I never leave any of my people behind, and I'm gonna shoot, you know, bang, 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 and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, and hold on, there's like a bunch of other different media things, and a couple other movies, and like video games and even books where there are also these characters with the last name Shepherd who are like, I'm the leader and I'm going to get everybody out of whatever situation and save the world. And I think to myself, every single time I see one of these people named Shepard, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, if I were in that situation, I would totally trust this guy to do whatever he does to save the day. And, you know, often it's like, you know, Jesus, you know, he's the shepherd. And it's like, and I'm going to go to work and try and make some money and maybe survive another week and a half. And it's like, you know, a bunch of, like, you know, trust things. It's like, why would I trust a, you know, fictional character to fictionally save the world when, you know, it's like, I know a shepherd who did save the world. And it's like, yeah, so
basically, if I can understand this, what you're pointing at is to say, like, how easily we are to trust on, in your examples, it was like kind of more dynamic figures of who are taking responsibility for what's going on around them, when there is a reality of a shepherd, and we seem to lack the, I don't know, the initiative to actually follow that shepherd and kind of place our faith in what he's done and what he has us doing. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I wonder if there's also, there's something about how people shepherd. Like, we get it, we want to follow things that otherwise we get excited about, or, I don't know, there's more of like a type A type of guy, and we're like, leader shepherd, when I don't know, maybe Jesus is that, I guess, but he's also not always that, and because those like other types of shepherd folks represent things that otherwise draw us in as humans, as opposed to people that are trying to be faithful to Christ.
You know, I've come to the reality here in the last couple of months or so that if I had to, I was trying to figure out where people get stuck between accepting the gospel for what it is and getting into the kingdom and saying, this is, yeah, okay. And sinking teeth into it and saying, you're right, this is what I want to do with my life. I want to follow this king. And I liken it very much to a parachute. You know what I'm saying? Like, the kingdom of God is very much like a parachute, that it actually can't get used until you let it do its job. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you take a run at the cliff and then grab one hand onto the tree at the end of the cliff and don't actually ever jump, your parachute's never going to open and do its job.
Right.
And, like, I think people are so, I mean, and this is me, you know, but so afraid to just jump off the cliff and let the parachute do the work. Because you can't ever say, I have faith in this parachute, because you actually never even gave it a shot. You just talked about how great the parachute would be if one day you decided to jump off the cliff. But you never actually put your faith in that thing, right? Like, you would tell everybody on how great it was and why you bought it and what it's going to do when you finally use it, and how you know people that have used this parachute, and it really does. It does sail, and it's good times and glorious. But at the end of the day, you're still taking a run go at the cliff and grabbing onto a tree branch on your way out and saying, no, not quite yet. I want to look over the cliff, but I can't jump. And it's right there. Like, there's just a trust factor of, I'm not willing to find out whether this parachute is going to open. I will tell everybody it will open, and I'm sure it will open, but I can't do it. I can't jump. And so does it eventually all point out to that we're just flat out scared to trust a God of this magnitude? You know what I'm saying? Because you think of how much stuff you have to let go, and you have to say, I don't have to be in control of this. I'm going to let God be in control of this, and I will just accept what comes. That is an impossible life to plan for.
Yeah.
And nobody likes that. Nobody likes saying, I don't know what's coming next. I don't know what we're going to do, but this parachute says it's got me covered, and I'll be good once I jump off the cliff. And we just can't jump. We just flat out can't do it.
And that's the thing, I guess, that, like, the opposite of opposite of faith is not doubt. It's certainty, right? It's being sure of things. Sometimes we think of faith wrong. Whereas if we're called to faith and we feel like we have to be certain, like, that's not the right burden. But the nature of faith is to trust that those things are what they are, and to live life in the reality of what you're placing your faith in. And so if you say, I believe this thing, but my life doesn't change, and I don't live my life as if my reality is impacted by the things that I say I believe, then I don't really believe it, right? And so what you're saying is that if we are we are just, it's so big to hand all that stuff over and say, I actually am placing my faith in God in this thing and say my reality has changed and the way I interact with the world and with other people has changed because of what I believe. And that's a hard thing to grasp onto because we lose all of our attempt at control or understanding and just say that it belongs to God. And maybe to Andrew's point, why do sometimes we struggle to embrace that when otherwise we may not struggle to embrace that from a human leadership perspective, when obviously God has demonstrated through the things that he's done with humanity that he can and should be trusted, it is the nature of his character to be trusted in those ways. And I think that's hard.
Yeah, and actually I think some of the things that they have a harder time jumping because they just assume that your entire reality changes, like you no longer eat or drink or need to breathe once the parachute's got you. But like that's not the way. That's quite not how it works. You know what I'm saying? Like God will he will guide the parachute on where it needs to go. But like, you know, just because you decided to take the plunge and follow this king where the king was going to lead you, this does not automatically mean you're uprooted from everything that he connected you to start with. You know, like they think they say, okay, if I'm going to follow Christ, then I got to be willing to put my job on the table and my house on the table, and I've got to be willing to move to a foreign country, and I will live in the dredges. And here's the deal. If you were smart, you'd do that, right? Like, not do all those things just because you want to, but say, yeah, these are all on the table because I trust the parachute. Whatever the parachute wants to do, I guess I'm cool with, right?
Yeah.
But, like, it's foolish to think that all of a sudden, just because you're flying in the air, that your hunger is satisfied, you no longer need drinks, you don't breathe anymore, you look nothing at all like the creation that he made you to be. Because that would be inherently a lie in God's reflection of his own character when he created you in the first place. Right? And so, like, I think there's some fear there in that God's going to change you into something that you don't like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That he's going to produce something. If you let the parachute take the breeze and he guides you into something, you're like, I don't like this. I don't want this. And look, there is a possibility he will do that. But really, from all the things that you say that you believe about the parachute, are you any better off holding on to the tree stump? Are you any better off trying to grab onto the rock on your way out of the cliff? I think that's foolish. And I say that as an indictment on my own life as I pass it around. But
yeah,
is life looking any different or any more free with you straddled between a 3,000-foot chasm that you could be, you know, soaring over opposed to you just hanging by the 3,000-foot chasm, holding onto a tree and going, yeah, I bet that would be sweet.
Yeah, all right. All right. That it? Andrew, get off my lawn?
Get off my lawn.
All right. All right. Get off your lawn. Follow the right shepherd, I guess. Okay. Hey, you listen to Live from the Path. You can find us every week at livefromthepath.org. You can watch past clips from the show, sign up for the podcast, and all that stuff. There was an article about... it said that the Institute on Family Studies released a study Thursday which found that the couples who attend worship services together, or when only the man attends worship services, are happier than couples in which neither partner or only the woman attends. Isn't that interesting?
I don't believe that
makes sense to you, Dan?
Yeah.
How come?
I know a lot of families where just the wife will come, and then she puts pressure on the husband to come. Even when she tries not to, she'll go in spurts. Well, she'll back off, and then she'll start pressuring, and that causes strife in the family because the husband doesn't want to go.
Oh, that makes sense. Makes sense. If the man is kind of leading in that area,
right?
It tends to things happen more naturally as opposed to a stubborn dude on the other end of it. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Anyway, that just seemed to pop out at me. Mike, you got some deer lives from the path?
Yeah, I think so. Hang on.
Okay.
I wasn't quite spaced up for him.
No, yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I was trying, there was something else in here. Hold on, that I thought was interesting. 2008, they found that married church-going Americans were more likely to describe themselves as very happy than Americans who did not attend church regularly.
Well, I mean, Christians are liars. In general.
And I don't trust the word happy.
They just tend to say false things sometimes to prop up. Like they're Jesus's PR people, you know what I'm saying?
No, you know that,
Jesus makes us super happy.
Actually, that's kind of a weird way to put it too, because they said 78% of men and women and couples who regularly go to service together, or where only the man attends regularly, report that they are very happy or extremely happy after adjusting for differences in race, age, education, marital status, region, and other factors. How do you adjust for marital status? Isn't the question as to whether
married people
couples are region and other factors?
How do you adjust for any of that?
Yeah, right.
Well, they're a different ethnic group. They're probably not happy anyway.
Yeah, what's up with
that? Happiness to someone in New York City probably means a little bit different than happiness in someone in Louisiana.
Yeah, right. Look, the age, they're 70. They must be curmudgeons. 10-point difference in the other way.
They survived the Great Depression. Everything's happy.
They're nine. They don't even know stress yet.
How did you get married? Forget it. We're banning the survey.
Preteen couple.
So here's their description. Our findings suggest that men's religious attendance is particularly beneficial to their relationships, perhaps in part because churches, synagogues, mosques, and temples are some of the few institutions in American life that devote sustained attention to encouraging men to invest in their families. Well, that's probably true. So really, really, this is a question on dudes going to church.
Who did this survey?
It said it's by the Institute on Family Studies.
Okay. Probably people of faith, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it probably said that on the questionnaire.
Yeah. So often when a person of non-faith tries to study people of faith, they just don't get it. You know?
Oh, yeah,
they
right.
They don't get the parachute. You know, they get, oh, you attend church, that makes you religious. It's like, maybe this has nothing to do with religious. Maybe it's my life, you know?
Yeah.
And people, they just don't get it. Anytime you hear like a news investigation on religion, you know, they're always so surfacey and so, I always walk away going, you don't have a clue what you just were talking about, do you,
Robert? No, that's true.
You know?
It also brings up the question, and this was later in the article, that where there's a issue with correlation and causation. They said that may reflect the fact that males who are settled in their lives and highly socialized are both more likely to succeed in their marriages and more likely to attend church. Once again, it may mean that folks who have their lives together tend to avoid substance abuse, practice good health habits, and go to church. So, like, they're implying that it's not church that made the difference. It's just that people that are have it more together in their marriage are more likely to go to church. But they're not willing necessarily to attribute it to the church attendance.
Because their lives are already perfect. So, oh, yeah, and we do church, too.
Yeah, so that's not exactly a representation of a Christ follower. It's just someone that attends church.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
Because they should or something.
We have a white picket fence.
Yeah.
And we go to church.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
What? Move
it. I ran into a situation this weekend where that designation of people who actually have a relationship with Christ and people who just attend church kind of came to a spearhead, because I was out at one of the homeless camps this weekend, and I met a dude. His name was Lau. And he was talking to me about the fact that he had just graduated from a program that was a year-long substance abuse program where he had to learn about Jesus and was trying to get clean of a couple drugs that he was on. And he has a sister who's been a Christian for 10, 15 years is what he said. She's gone to church for the last 10 to 15 years, and she even works within the church. And dude's been knowing Jesus for about a year now is what he said. And he had conversations with his sister to where he was talking about deep in faith stuff that he had run into through this this substance abuse program, where she had absolutely no idea what he was talking about. Like, she had absolutely no clue what he was saying. And he was telling us about this, and we were understanding him. You know, he was talking about stuff like when you finally are a part of the church and finally have the Spirit within you and things like that, you start to see, Jesus from a different light. But through the process of getting to know more about Jesus, you find more and more things that you thought were okay, or things that you didn't realize were a problem that you need to start working on. And God, the Holy Spirit, just keeps showing you these things. And he was talking to her about this, and she just had absolutely no clue what he was talking about. And it just made me think to myself about when you guys were talking about that whole, you know, difference between really knowing Jesus or the people that are that checkbox Christian that we've called them before, how that works. And it just drives me nuts with these surveys that we hear about the percentages of Christians that do something like this. But, you know, like you guys said, it's a huge amount of people that all they do is check the boxes. That box that says they're Christian, but they don't actually have any kind of faith, and they don't have any kind of relationship with Christ. And then we get this skewed information about how Christians live in America and all this different stuff. So it just made me think of that, and that's why I made that face.
What a crappy life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, what a crappy life to be hanging out by the cliff for 10 years, 15 years.
Never jumping?
Going, yeah, this looks great. I'm good here.
It's like you're bored on Sundays. Yeah. I had nothing to do on a Sunday morning, so figured I'd come here.
I mean,
I was raised that way.
It just kind of takes so much work to claim that you understand the cliff jump.
It sounds exhausting.
And then have never done it. And then have never given it a shot. And even to watch it fail. Wouldn't you rather know? Like, I mean, at least you go to the best restaurant in your town and you look at the most expensive item. And one time in your life, you're like, I got to know. I at least got to know whether this thing's actually worth $65. I bet it's not. But I'm going to give it a shot. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a chance it might be. And you just can't find anybody, you know, that will say, I got to give this a go. And most everybody I know that has left the church or left life with Christ never had it. Never jumped the cliff. Really stood 10 feet back from the cliff and saw a bunch of people jumping off and said, you know what? They didn't take enough time to be nice to me. Yeah, okay. You know, jump off the cliff and be with everybody else because that's where good things are happening.
And man, can you imagine just being a bystander to that joy too? Like you're watching people, you know, in that faith and in that relationship with Christ, and they get that joy from that, and they get the things that we get that are tangible in our lives from a relationship with Christ. And that person had to sit there for 10 years and watch people, at least in some way, deal with it, hopefully, in this church, and just kind of stare at it and go, man, that must be nice.
Yeah.
I think that's where you get people who become fakes, and they don't even intend to be, but they mimic it. They say, well, I'll just smile like they're smiling. I'll say what they say.
Yeah, I'll climb the tree, then I appear higher.
Yeah. They don't even know they're faking it, but they just have never, they've never jumped.
We're in the same building. I must be feeling the same thing.
Well, and that's the thing is, but I mean, if they were to ask you, because I think Dan's right. I don't know if they're going at it from a, you know, I'm going to fake my way into this community. Right. Why would you, right? If there's pure joy available, you don't take the margarine. And so they're, you know, they attempt to fake it, and then they get frustrated and go. But, like, what would you say is the difference for them? Like, you think you could convince them that they're phoning it in? Or do most people reject that? Like, when you say, listen, I got to be honest with you, you haven't jumped off that cliff quite yet. But I have. Look at me. I'm taller. I'm higher. I feel like I'm floating. Look, there's occasional joy. I respond to the church Facebook post. Come on, man. This is what it's got to feel like. And I'm like, that's the thing. Is like, I just don't know how to talk to people in that arena. And say, if this is what it feels like, I would bail. You know what I'm saying? If this is all that there is, you know, that we get to show up and vacuum up the joint. if that's all the kingdom of God was offering, I wouldn't stay.
See, here's my problem is the fact that I'm not ever the one that finds myself having those conversations with Christians. I have difficulty having the conversation. I have more difficulty talking to Christians about Christ than I do walking into, you know, a bar downtown and people are screaming at each other, yelling at each other, fighting, and I'd rather have conversation with those people about Jesus than I would Christians. I've never found myself, not necessarily willing, maybe it is willing, but in a place where I'd have the conversation with the people that I go to church with.
I think it's a tougher conversation because now we're talking about down to the nitty-gritty, stuff that you need to change or stuff that you're holding in front of God to actually, I mean, you're basically talking about guys that guy's down at the bar, you're like, you don't even have a parachute on. I'm telling you what the parachute is, and I'm telling you to jump because this is where the joy is. And the guys that are already at the church and can't quite jump, these guys are the ones throwing rocks in their own parachute. And you're like, you got to get rid of these rocks, man. They're keeping you from jumping the cliff.
So I think we're gifted differently, though. Shepherds would rather not. Yeah, maybe they're more comfortable talking to the church person, trying to help them take their next step, and more an evangelist wired person would be more comfortable going to a bar. That God does gift us differently, wire us differently. I mean that's legit.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
We all be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
No, that's true. I would. I'm generally more comfortable trying to help church people sort out
the rocks in the parachute.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally, and the truth is, like what I run into a lot is people what you're kind of talking about, which is people mistaking kind of shallow Sunday school types of answers as if it is deep theological truth, and not even recognizing when what they're talking about doesn't actually seem to apply to what's going on. Like, well, you know, you've been talking about something that has some sort of depth to it, and then we can say, yes, and Jesus died for us. I'm like, yeah, but he also wrote a whole Bible and walked on the earth, and so we should respond to that in addition to the good news of him dying on the cross. And that actually is where my comfort level is. And it's difficult for me to talk to somebody the way Boova that you're talking about. Like it's a gap in my life. I'm not comfortable doing it. Not because I'm afraid of talking about who Jesus is.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I don't meet people well on that, on that level because it's so important to me. It seems like a big chasm. Like I just jumped into something that's deeply personal, even though they probably wouldn't take it that way because it's not deeply personal to them. Yeah. They don't even love Jesus, yeah. Right? But to me, it feels like I just asked something that like really cut to the heart of a relationship that I don't deserve to have yet. And so like that's what it feels like on my end of things. And there's probably there's not a reality to that at all points in time. But that's where my comfort level is.
So. Maybe that's some of our problem, though, because like most of the people that I know that screw up evangelism are going at it in a shepherd way. You know what I'm saying? You got to treat your wife better. You got to be better with your kid. You got to stop telling lies. You know what I'm saying? Like they're going at it from a this is what a kingdom person looks like instead of just describing the parachute. And an evangelical dude is like he talks about the parachute, and that's pretty much all he talks about. And then it gets moved into a shepherding conversation, but like. Most of the guys I know, I've talked to some fellas at work about some Jesus stuff, and like they tried to shepherd him right off the bat. They tried to put him in the shepherd program, and they fought it with every being without even talking about the parachute.
That's the deal. Right. We keep trying to help non-Christians how to be better Christians.
Yeah,
you don't love Jesus yet.
Yeah, that's why you need both. You're probably a terrible shepherder.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, or you know, I don't.
That'd be awful.
I'm not saying don't try, but I'm just saying.
No, no, I'm saying you don't try movies.
Yeah, no, that's why I don't.
You're getting in the way. Hey,
here's the deal.
Go see your dirty movies.
Right? I would much rather go to Deadpool and talk to the dudes that aren't looking away from the boobies. Just be like, man, you and I both know you don't need to be looking that. Look away right now.
Oh, I'm sure that whether it's going on and you're like, hey, I'd like to draw your attention to me for a moment.
Well, hey, man, here's the deal. Here's what I'd do. I'd wear my banana suit.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, that would work.
That's creepy.
No, it's creepy, but it would work.
Paul did it in Antioch.
I don't know how to
get away from movie.
Okay. It would work.
I've already made one mistake tonight, but I feel like if you're going to be someone's watching a movie and you're like, hey, stop looking at those boobies and look at my banana.
Well, obviously I'm not going to pose like that, you weirdo.
I'm just saying.
Why would I say it like that? That's creepy. That's worse. I would walk up to them, sit down next to them and look at that situation and say, hey, man, this is a bunch of trouble. And then they go, hey, that was kind of funny.
Hey,
and then situation's over. And I'll be like, let me talk to you about Jesus.
I don't think that's going to work.
Hey, these jokes have appeal.
Let's split.
Shoot, what everyone else thought of a clean way to say that. Why did I say the dirty?
Yeah, you went straight to the dirty.
Dang.
And you're the shepherd.
I know.
Yeah, man. Hey, maybe we need to go to a homeless camp and just talk to some dudes about the parachute.
I might not need to be involved in any of this. Someone needs to show me how to be a better Christian. That's my bad. I knew that too. I knew it. See, here's the thing. It pops in my mind. It says, you shouldn't have thought of that. And then you certainly don't need to say that out loud. I'm like, well,
don't
maybe
make
I'll
anyone
just,
else stumble on this, Ben.
Maybe I'll just say that. Banana.
Hey, it's a safe room. Whoops.
My community.
What a mistake. All right.
All right. Dear Life from the Path. I grew up in a poor family on a farm in the South. I worked very hard during my childhood. Throughout my childhood, I was told I was a bad girl, in quotes, who always did the wrong things or who would never stop talking. Yeah, that sounds right. When I was 16, I moved more than 1,000 miles away. My mother happily drove me to the airport to go and live with my 21-year-old boyfriend. Okay, not as good. I am 29 now and still live more than 1,000 miles away. To this day, when I try to discuss with my mother why she sent me away so young, she tells me I was too difficult of a child and that was what I wanted, so she signed me over to the end of the 10th grade before summer break. I will never forget how happy she was to drop me off at the airport. I wasn't the greatest kid, I know. I know I was bad. Can 16-year-olds choose where and with whom they live? Or should the parents make those decisions? Please help me. Lost and lonely. I feel like you're asking two questions here. The legality of the situation, which sounds a bit shady to me. And then the morality of the situation. Both of them seem a little bit, maybe not the right move.
Is there a dad in there? Or is it just mom?
Didn't really make a mention of it.
Yeah, I didn't hear a dad.
Didn't really make a mention of it. But, yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Especially the difficult kid, you need two parents.
This
is why God loves strong marriages. You know what I'm saying? You can both get irritated after about an hour, and you got to tag team out. Say, look, you handle these heathens for a little while. I'm done. They take up all my patience within an hour, go recharge, and then you work for an hour, and I'll come back in.
So I mean, I'm not trying to figure out what she wants. So there's no apology from her. Like, yeah, I really was crappy. I made my mom happy for me to go. She's just wanting to diss her mom. Is that it?
You know, I don't know. If you look back on your 16-year-old self, I don't know that anyone is uber proud. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Like, do we give a blanket pass to say, look, I was 16. I didn't know the world as it was. You knew better, Ma.
Yeah.
You knew better. First of all, to send me out.
Well, yeah, but what's her point? What's she trying to gain from that now?
I don't know, perspective on whether she was that bad or her mom made a poor decision.
I think
right?
she,
12 years, right?
I think she feels hurt and wants to be justified in her hurt. Like, because she said she called upon the fact that the memory of her mom is nothing but she can't remember anything but the mom being mad being happy about letting her go. I think she's just trying to hold. She's just trying to hold on to something with her mom being wrong rather than her.
But what does that do?
Well, of course, it's probably not going
to
do much, but still
there.
To me,
it sounds like they're trying to find their worth somewhere, right? Like, they're trying to say, look, was I that bad that I deserve to be given away, or did my mom screw up and I'm not really that bad? You know what I'm saying? Like, is she...
Maybe she failed momming, being a mom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, there's some of that going on in there, too.
Absolutely, I think there is.
Here's the deal. Let me tell you about a parachute I know. Mom screwed up. Absolutely. I think that the mom should not have let her go that soon. Mom called her a difficult child and now is seeming like she doesn't even want to have the conversation. It sounds like mom has, might have a little bit of regret about the situation. Probably should. I mean, you know, regardless of difficult child or not, you don't just go, hey, I'm going to ship you off 1,000 miles away, be happy about it, and then rid myself of you. Now, I don't know how their relationship has been since then. I don't know if the mom
seems pretty absent,
kept in contact, but, you know, regardless.
She should have sent her to the uncle, not the boyfriend.
Yeah, well, regardless, it sounds like the mom just shirked off her responsibilities for the parenting of this child. And ultimately, like you guys have said, it sounds like there's a possibility where the dad isn't there. And the dad not being there definitely makes it an easier situation to shirk off.
I think dad's just working. They're on a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is dad's fault.
Well, then dad failed.
He's shepherding.
Dad was not shepherding his family.
No. No, he was not.
Yeah. Dad failed, which caused mom to fail, which caused daughter to fail.
He didn't like us. He went out and baled hay.
Yeah. I think if you look at this in a healthy way, if your daughter shows up in 10th grade and says, I'm out of here. I'm done. I'm running away. Here's the deal.
A 21-year-old boyfriend.
With a 21-year-old boyfriend. You say, look, I wish with every heart of my being you were not doing this, and I will do everything I can to stop you. But like, I can't make you change your choices. You have to give people the freedom to make some choices. This one's really on the line for me with the boyfriend, man. This one's really on the line.
Now, she wasn't smart enough at 16. She's not developed enough to make decisions like that.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said that last part, because like, I get the freedom of choice, but like, I don't know if I'd let my daughter have the freedom to move 1,000 miles away.
Well, but here's the deal. In the long run, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Chain her to something?
Yeah. I don't know.
Lock her in the house?
Well, it doesn't sound like she was going to be able to run away 1,000 miles. It sounded like mom and dad drove her to the airport.
That's what I don't understand about this situation is like, you don't get to bail as a parent no matter what the thing looks like, right? And there are people out there that are parenting kids that are much tougher than whatever emotional, you know, I'm having a tough time with you than you think. There's people that are going to be wiping the slobber off their kid's chin for the rest of their life, and that's the deal.
Yeah.
And for you to walk up and say, I can't handle you because of your behavior, is not only insulting to the parents that are wiping the slobber, right, but it just shows that you were not ready to have kids, and you're in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
All that aside, right, you got to have a little bit of grace for people. You know, she got in over her head. She didn't know what to do, so she did what she thought was best at the time. I think it would be helpful for the daughter if you say, look, you deserve better than you got, but it's all I had. That's at least an honest perspective.
Yeah.
You deserved better than you got, but I gave you everything that I had, and what I had was not enough, and I can tell you that right now. But she's not saying that.
Yeah. I also want to know more about the boyfriend. Is this an internet boyfriend? How does a farm girl have a boyfriend 1,000 miles away?
Well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know.
Did he move?
Internet boyfriends are creepy old.
Shepherds kind of move around like that.
True.
No, they don't.
They do not.
Maybe it was a
carny. Wait a minute.
What'd you say?
He could have been a carny.
You think he was a carny that he was traveling through?
Yeah.
Met her and then he settled down 1,000 miles away?
All the possibilities, this makes the most sense.
That's true.
Definitely a carny.
We have so far have shepherd or carny.
Yeah.
Maybe the dad was a carny as well.
Maybe it's a bunch of carnies. I wouldn't include that in the letter because it would have shaded on how we would have responded.
Maybe dad was a carny. This kid worked with dad.
Yeah.
Dad moved away with the kid. Well, then she would have moved away to be with dad.
That explains a lot.
That's got to be the deal.
Don't be a carny father that moves away from your kids.
Let's see what secular says.
I feel we failed her in this answer.
If secular talks about carnies, I'm going to be pretty excited.
What is your answer? What is your actual answer? This girl comes to you looking for this thing.
Question? Her question is, isn't my mom bad?
I'm going to tell her that she's asking the wrong question. We really need to talk about who her family really is. and then talk to her about Jesus. That's the honesty.
Yeah, can 16-year-olds choose where and with whom they live?
No.
Or should the parents make those decisions? Yeah. The parents should make those decisions.
Yeah.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah, exactly. A different set of parents need to make the decision to keep you home.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is, I mean, you got to get past whatever, what she's tying to a bunch of emotional crap.
She's probably going through a tough time right now and is trying to pull back from that and try and find a root of her troubles now. So that's she true. Wants to ask about something that happened 12 years prior.
And what prior. Is what is the root of it? Look, your mom's opinion of you does not define who you are.
Yeah.
That's it.
And here we go. Jesus loves you. Yeah. You can start right now.
Let's talk about here.
Grab
here.
The parachute.
Who your parents go. Actually
we'll
are.
Talk about the parachute.
Life starts today.
Your mom is actually one of the rocks, to be honest with you.
Our God is a father parachute. To the fatherless.
That's right. Let's see what secular says. It's a shame that when babies emerge, they don't bring with them a set of detailed instructions. You appear to be the daughter of a woman who didn't know how to be a good mother. Children who receive positive reinforcement for good behavior are usually better behaved than those who have it drilled into them from a young age that they are bad. When that happens, a child begins to believe what the parent is saying and act on it. While some 16-year-olds are mature enough to decide where and with whom they want to live, it's usually with a relative or qualified guardian and not a boyfriend. However, from reading your letter, I can't escape the feeling that what's really bothering you is the idea that, by giving in to your wishes, your mother rejected you. To work that through, you may need the help of a licensed therapist. Or parachute. I'm just saying, it's cheaper.
Parachute.
Maybe both.
Ready?
Yep.
You're live from the path. I am a girl in my junior year of high school. My boyfriend of 3 years is very good to me, affectionate, attentive, and very good looking. I don't think he cheats on me, but he does have serious flatulence.
Wait, no. Sorry, you made that up.
You did, that That's was, really what it says?
You put a funny word in there when he said something like he doesn't take care of his back hair or something.
He thinks it's hilarious and does it in public.
This is real?
Just to embarrass me to death. Oh, boy. He also does it at the end of lovemaking, which I think is gross, and he thinks is the funniest thing in the world. Life from the past, he's the only serious boyfriend I've ever had. Are all guys this gross and inappropriate? It's putting a serious damper on how I feel about him. Please help me to save our relationship.
So here's the situation. You're in a serious relationship at 17 that has now gotten physical. No matter what has happened, you need to back out now. Especially if you're now seeing the immaturity of this kid for A, being willing to go to a physical relationship with you to this point, and B, finding so much fun in flatulence after said situation.
Here's the deal. Passing,
leave him.
Passing some volcano wind is funny.
It I'm is funny.
Yeah. She doesn't have a girlfriend. She has a boyfriend. Boys fart.
Yes,
that's just
do.
How it is,
yeah,
right?
They do.
Now he's making some poor choices. She's made the worst choices.
Yes.
Yeah, agree.
Put your legs together. Stop it.
There's something to be said for Dan saying that. I'm just saying. I don't know. I've been on the show for a couple years now. I just you never really get prepared for that statement to come from Dan's mouth. But I definitely agree with it, Dan.
Yeah.
Well, here again. This is why ladies have to be very careful on who they choose to share their life with, because they're expecting something that men at that, I will call them boys at that age, aren't prepared to give. They're not responsible enough to give. They're not getting into the same agreement you think you're getting into. When you get, notice all the things that she said about him. He's affectionate, attentive, and good looking. Okay. He is not affectionate or attentive. I can almost guarantee you both these things.
You don't know what that looks like.
Very low bar
of
affection and attentiveness. Because I know what those men look like. And you know what they look like? They're defeated. They don't even have enough energy to let one rip before they go to bed. They are wiped out from all the work that they've done that day and all the attentive stuff that they've tried to do. Like, it wears a man down because it's not their natural habitat.
Yeah.
You ask the dude what he thought about during the day, he'll give you the four things. And that's it. He thought of four things. The women have 75 things. Done going ahead. How they're going to organize this, what they're going to do, what's going to happen if she calls and says this thing, will it look like I'm aligned with this gal? Oh, man, that will hurt her feelings, blah, blah, blah. Dudes are like, I should probably fill up the gas in the mower for this weekend, because that'll be real trouble. I don't want to have to go up there twice. That would suck.
And I wonder if she'll think it's funny this time if I fart.
I wonder if I really got a fart in here, if there's going
to
be a deal.
Hey, man, I'm at the place where I even think about someone I'm never going to meet, we'll never talk to him, we'll never see farting is funny.
Yes.
She'll think it's funny this time.
Yeah,
that's the
or she won't. But this is totally worth it. Still.
Yeah, it's still funny to me.
I call this the lawnmower. That'll ties in with that gas thing I was going to buy. I'm the funniest man alive.
Thought number two.
So really, what it boils down to is like you are living in a self-deceived bubble. Listen, I'm not. this is terrible to say, but listen, a guy that you have an intimate relationship with, and like, there is teasing your lady, and then there is being completely inappropriate and showing no respect for her. Right? And so, like, you know, maybe you tried that fart action one time, and she wasn't digging on it. That should have been your line, and that's the end of it. And so, like, there is enough here for me to say, first of all, you know, there's a parachute available. You're looking for good stuff on land. It's not available to you. Like, you've made the best of what you've made do with what you could find, but, like, you don't know what's available. And, like, you got to be done with this man. It's time for him to go.
Yeah.
Even in secular terms, I would say it's time for him
to go.
Dump
and move on.
I would double say it in bigger picture, worldly terms as far as God is concerned. Like, I'm telling you, there's parachutes available and there's good times ahead. There's joy to be found outside this dude. But, like, even just a black and white, hey, this guy farts after we have sex, I would say, you know what? You're done with him. Yeah. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
And I think people would say, look, that's silly. Well, if it's silly, then he should just stop it. I mean, you know, I don't know. Sometimes maybe he should stop eating. I don't know.
Well,
maybe there's logical.
Here's the deal. There's ways to otherwise go about these types of things. You know,
you're talking like a left cheek sneak.
Or leave the room for a second. Hey, yeah.
Excuse yourself to the restroom.
Now hold on, this is going to look different. You finish up lovemaking, you're like, gotta go. Womp. I don't think that's going to go over very well.
He's not saying do it then leave, because that'd be real awful.
Yeah, probably that'd be even worse.
Yeah. Hey,
thanks for the lovemaking. Womp. I walk away.
I'm going to get something to drink, you want anything?
That's true, man. Put two thoughts together. Do something smooth.
Yeah.
Say, like, hey, I'm going to make a milkshake. You want some milkshakes?
Breakfast?
Yeah. I'm cooking dinner. In either case, we're done with him.
Yeah.
Johnny Affectionate is out. Anybody else want to defend this man?
No.
Secular says, Your boyfriend's problem isn't his flatulence, it's his immaturity. You think?
What?
Young children think that flatulences fall down funny. But
it
is. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, let's do this.
All adults still think it's funny.
They usually outgrow the kind of humor you describe by the time they reach his age.
That's not true.
No, here's the deal.
She needs a girlfriend, too.
Yeah. We just move it to more appropriate places. When you're 2 years old, you scoot across the front room and you womp it and you're like, yeah. When you're say 30, you just go either around your fellas or you do it in a room by yourself and go, that's the best one all day.
Yeah.
Best one. Had to have been in Fritos.
Hope I can do that tonight.
That's right. C says, tell him what he's doing isn't funny to you, that it's making you think less of him, and will be a deal breaker if he doesn't stop.
Now, hold on. That's not how it works. Like, you tell me that it's not funnier when she goes, hey, that's not funny. I'm like, yeah, it is. Ha ha. Like, I'm sorry. That's not really moving the needle for me.
You find more fun in the opposition.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the reaction you like.
Yeah.
She says, if you do, it may save the relationship, unless you want to continue being the girlfriend of the class clown. Or should I say, no class clown.
Or a dude in general.
Yeah.
Men. Yeah, here's the thing. There's difference between like specific problems that you're having with your man and man problems. Wind is just a man thing. That's not like your guy isn't gross and has more gas than everybody else. It's a man problem. Just, you know, call a lady up and say, hey, is your dude wind? She'll be like, yes, he does the wind. He laughs at it. He thinks it's funny. You know, like, that's a dude problem. That's not like, don't pile it onto the list of things as to why your relationship's messed up. That's just a man problem.
Yeah. All right, we got one more here.
Yeah, we'll do one more.
Dear Life from the Path. As an older male retiree, I frequently encounter people at social gatherings who tilt their heads back, narrow their eyes, and ask, exactly what was it that you did at XYZ Corporation?
What? This is a specific description?
It's a very specific description.
XYZ is obviously generalized. But here we go. When they find out I was what they consider to be just a paper pusher, they abruptly turn their backs and walk away. Can you suggest an appropriate response to this form of snobbery?
Yeah. Walk the other direction.
Man, I'd stop going to these parties.
Yeah, stop going to these social gatherings.
Stop hanging out with a bunch of stuff.
Get yourself a sweet hobby, old man. You got time. Start whittling.
I mean, is this more complicated than his house?
No. To hang out with different people who like the wind.
This guy has no idea where his worth comes from. He wants to find it in social gatherings, and he's not currently.
Is he embarrassed of being a paper pusher?
To be fair, there's not a whole lot of follow-up questions to I ran the stapler.
Yeah, agreed, but like...
Well, how often did you have to reload it? I mean, what else do you want to ask a guy?
Hey, man, that's actually something I would ask someone.
I would turn around and go, well, that sounded like a sweet gig. See you, buddy.
Yeah, this guy might be more hurt than he needs to be and is painting it off like people are legitimately just going, paper pusher, and then walking away. That may not be the situation. If it is, I would say stop going to these social gatherings and find yourself in different places. Maybe find another set of dudes that you're willing to wind around.
Because he's faced this his whole life. This is the job he's always had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's just now his retiree thing.
And hang with different people and get a different response.
Yeah, man. It's like, here's the deal. Who are these snobby people who are expecting a retiree to be someone who's made millions? Like a janitor retires eventually.
True.
Nothing wrong with that guy. That guy, you know, pushed a broom for 60 years. That is admirable.
You got a story or two in there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, I remember this one time I cleaned up after an entire assembly of people who threw up. It's like, tell me about that, Chuck.
Yeah, so here's the deal. It's like, everybody actually has stories like that. So the truth is like, I feel like he's not trying. But we say, hey, what did you do? And say, well, I worked for X. And if there's something interesting about that that you'd like to share, just share it. Yeah. Don't expect them to be like, hey, can you, like, tell me an interesting story. Or, did you ever push paper at this time?
Oh, claims adjuster.
James, were you an astronaut or a cowboy? Neither? Well, I'm walking away.
Well, and that's the thing. Is like, why don't you just open with that? Like, you know, what exactly did you do at XYZ Corporation? Nothing. I was of no consequence to that place.
I supported my family.
But yeah. I did some mean rock climbing.
Let me tell you what my family did, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, bring up something that you is interesting about you. I mean, if you had a non-interesting job, I'm assuming that you're getting invited to social gatherings because you did something with your life.
Yeah.
So just say, look, I was meaningless there. I spent all my time, blah, 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 making the world's biggest Lego castles in my basement.
I worked there for 50 years, and I stapled some stuff, but I had a sweet vacation in Barbados last year. It's like, yeah. Find something fun.
Yeah, no. You're asking how to solve your inability to work in a social situation. You're like, what do I do about my awkwardness? Your question is way too pointed. Just say, in general, I don't know how to handle myself.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm an awkward person.
Yeah.
How do I handle that?
It is amazing, though, how adults treat other adults in the work world. Like my wife just changed jobs, right? She's been in a school district for 15 years as an associate, which is about the bottom of the totem pole of public education, right? I mean, it is the scourge job. And they treat you like that. People don't make eye contact with you, they don't talk to you, you say hello to them, they ignore you for 15 years basically.
Yeah.
Now she's the administrative assistant to one of the principals, and everybody is talking to her as a peer, and it's a completely different world. I mean, it's like birds sing when she walks down the hall. She's like, I'm the same person. You guys just make me sick.
Wow.
She didn't say that. It makes me sick.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that would make me angry.
She's in a different school. She went to move to a different building, which she probably needed to. And now she's getting all the heaps of praise because she did a great job for 15 years, and people miss her. But it is. People just treat you completely different. Now, because she has a different title, it's the same person, people are looking and communicating with her completely differently than they did a week ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, huh.
It is kind of sad that it's that obvious.
Yeah. I mean, it's night and day different.
You know, I've never been any good at that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've always had a problem with talking to people in higher authority to me the same way I would talk to the guy that, you know, works in the parts department. And it's actually gotten me in trouble a couple times. Because here's the deal. Like, I think it's perceived that with exposition comes, you know, this way of speaking. You know what I'm saying? But, like, as far as I could tell, it felt like a lie to me. Because I would never talk to that man that way. It doesn't matter what job he held.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I've arm wrestled a couple people that are quite a bit high up in the company. And I told them that their speech was terrible, and I was just here for the free soda.
That's awesome.
I'm lucky they found it funny. What do you think, Bova?
I don't know. I wish I could say that I did that. I used to posture so much to people that...
No.
Yeah, no, imagine me. No. Imagine that. I work in the corporate world, and no. I would never do that. But
no, those cats are a lie.
If I found out there was a visitor that came to town, like, I'd make certain that I met them and spent time with them and, like, introduced myself, even when I was an associate. I would intentionally run into them in the hallway and just talk to them a little bit. And, you know, now when I'm a little bit... one rung higher in the company, like, it's made it so where I have a little bit more of a direct relationship with those people, but not enough to say that it was worth it. At one point in time, I got an accidental call from a VP, and like I went and talked to my HR about how I should handle the situation. I was like, should I call this person back? Should I send them an email? you know, should I just leave it alone? Or do you think it might have been an accidental call? Or what do I do? I literally went and talked to HR about it. And nowadays, I just look back on that. I'm like, what kind of posturing was I trying to do? I should have just called him back. Like, hey, man, you need something?
You called my phone, bro.
You called my phone? Who calls my phone and doesn't leave a voicemail? What do you want?
Yeah, that's rude.
So, yeah.
All right, let's get secular advice here.
Okay.
When someone asks that question, you might smile and respond, you know, I'm having such a great time in retirement, I can't really recall what I did there.
Lie.
Stupid.
I don't remember 65 years of my life.
If somebody said that to me, I'd be like,
Alzheimer's showed up.
Somebody says that to me, I'm going to go, oh, okay, well, yeah. You do remember, so what was it again?
Yeah, maybe you should have put the Jack Daniels down for a little while.
So you were a drunk your entire career.
Or if you're feeling mischievous, you could call out after the person, just kidding, I was the CEO.
What this advice is hard
this
to give.
This is the worst cocktail party how-to guide ever.
And if the person turns to come back, turn your back and walk away, because if your perception is correct, you have been conversing with someone who has terrible manners and no class. So here's the deal. Secular's advice is to, when you run into a guy that has no class, you join him.
You outclass him. You out no class him.
That's right. You get rid of all your class, too, and then you will both be no class fools.
Stoop to their level. No, stoop lower.
This is terrible advice. Seriously.
Thanks for that one, Secular.
Oh, mercy.
Is this what the parachute offers differently? Look, you just act the same.
Yeah.
You just be you.
Be a human being.
That's
and
it.
Be happy that you are.
That's it.
You know, actually, that's come up for me a few times lately. Where people are looking for some sort of advice or direction, and like one of the things the Christian life offers is consistency. Is like as the environment changes around you, if the nature of being faithful in the means is that you actually get to keep acting the same way, even as the environment flips in good times, bad times, like whatever the circumstances, people are acting like jerks, people are acting awesome. It really is just irrelevant. You just continue to be faithful in the means, and God handles the ends. And so like. It ultimately de-stresses your life, because there isn't much that could happen around you that otherwise doesn't, it doesn't make things that are easy to handle, but like, how you acted yesterday is really how you get to act today. It's just happening in a different environment. It's like, as things have changed around you, but like, I don't know, like it's kind of nice to be able to lean back and say, this is just how things are. I'm honest today. I was honest yesterday. I will be honest tomorrow. And, like, there isn't anything about the situation that can change that will make it say, I don't live a life of integrity, and be honest. And so that's just how it is. Like, it's just easier to live life. You're not carrying around a bunch of, I don't know how to act in this situation. Well, am I being faithful and righteous and honest? Well, okay, then. Things are fine.
You could claim to be the CEO and then turn your back on
them. Yeah.
That's an option.
I'm actually too good for you through my lies.
Yeah.
And here's my back. And this is going to be weird if you say, tap me or follow me.
That's awful. That's just awful.
Hey, Stu, why'd you turn your back on me? Well, I was trying to prove a point. Done.
I did it before you could.
Yeah, well, I mean, is she not thinking through this? Because I feel like I try not to put myself in a situation where I think, boy, if I get caught here, I will look double foolish. And, like, that's exactly what you've done. Like, well, I'm going to take a stand, and then someone's just going to be like, hey, why are you overreacting by turning your back on me or walking away?
Schmuck? I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
My dad was a paper pusher. That's a respectable position.
And here's the deal. He's obviously undercutting his own experience. That's not a title. No one actually says, I hired you as a paper pusher.
Yeah.
You're doing something. And like that you say, oh, well, I just push paper. If you dismissed it, how can you be upset that other people are also dismissing it as not important?
No, that's true. And actually what you're doing is you're buying into the lie where you're like, everyone says I was manager of this, I was manager of that. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, that guy got to go home every day at like 4 o'clock. And he made good money, and he didn't get wrapped up in a bunch of weird crap or was involved in a bunch of stressful stuff. He just showed up, stamped that paper, moved it right along, and loved his wife and kid.
Yeah.
That dude has got it figured out.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to climb the corporate ladder to what? So they can be weighed down by more responsibility for less money, just so you can say, they gave me a name tag. Huh. You dummy. You're a dummy. The life has fooled you. You know what I'm saying? You have believed the lie. You have exchanged the truth for a lie, and you have climbed the corporate ladder, which equals terrible, which is not terrible pay. It looks to be better pay, except for when you take the 85 grand they're offering you, spread that over 75 hours a week, now you're making $8 an hour. The kid raking your yard has made better decisions than you have. And you're sitting there worried about, is the decision I'm going to make today, I think they're going to fire me. I think we're going to downsize. I'm going to have to fire another guy. You're an idiot. You should rake yards for $8 an hour and go and be happy. Yeah. and be a happy man.
Right. If Paper Pusher didn't like it, he shouldn't have kept the, you know, like he could have done something else. But really what he's getting upset about is someone says, hey, what did you do? And he basically says, I'm unimportant. And then they respond as if he was unimportant, and then he's surprised at the nature.
Yeah.
Hey, they're treating me like I'm unimportant. Well, is that what you told them? Yes, it is. Well, then.
They should read between the lines. Yeah,
maybe they were right. You got the right job, friend.
Let's see. I tried to talk someone and basically influence how they thought of me through guilt and manipulation, and it didn't turn out right. What is your advice for me? Stupid. All right. You got one more over there? We'll do one more, and we'll be out of here.
Yeah, hold on. I wasn't prepared for one more. Dear, still not prepared. I'm just kind of guessing. Dear life from the past. Oh, no, that's too much. That's too heavy. We don't want to talk about that. Couple feels taken for a ride by freeloading friends. Oh, yeah.
This is up our alley right here.
Okay. Dear life from the past, I've been married to my husband for 11 years. Okay. We are financially and emotionally stable. We recently became friendly with another couple who are newly married, and the man wins all the time. Another couple who are newly married and not as financially secure as we are. They spend frivolously. When we go on vacation, they invite themselves along and assume they are staying in our travel trailer without asking. They have their own trailer they could bring. They don't offer to help pay for gas. The last trip we took, the wife cooked only one meal, while I prepared the rest for a three-day trip. This upcoming trip, they haven't offered to bring any meal. We don't mind sharing what we have and helping our friends out.
Yes, you do.
But we are starting to resent is the assumption that because we make more money, we'll pick up the tab for everything. Are we wrong to feel this way? My husband and I both are seeing this the same way.
Here's the deal. I had this conversation not 2 hours ago. You cannot be upset with people who you refuse to discuss with them as to why you would be upset.
Yes.
You can't expect them to change behavior unless you actually talk to them about the behavior that you don't like. And so you're being ridiculous. Well, how hard would it be to be like, you're making plans to go and said, hey, we'll take Monday, Wednesday, Thursday for dinner. Why don't you guys take Tuesday... whatever the ones I didn't say. You take those.
Whatever those days of the week are.
And then here's the thing. You didn't even have to confront a guy. You just said, we'll take these. Why don't you guys take those? And then what are they going to do? We prefer to freeload off you.
Yeah.
Okay, at least it's out in the open. Yeah.
What happened to our contract of you obviously make more money than us and are much more financially and emotionally stable, and therefore you're going to foot the bill for everything.
Then you
have an open conversation about the fact that, well, yeah, how do you think you're going to get to our place? You got to start making good financial decisions.
And how about, hey, why don't you, you guys got a camper. Why don't you bring your own camper?
What kind of pansy isn't willing to have this conversation?
Yeah.
Who says, hey, we're going on vacation, and someone says, we'll go with you, and you don't say, no, you won't.
I feel like I would never have that situation where someone was just like, I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to go have lunch, and then one of my buddies goes, yeah, me too, you're paying. I'm either going to go, okay, that works for me, because we have that relationship, or I'm going to go, no. Oh. No, I'm not going to do that, actually. Thanks for asking, though. Like some random stranger walks up to me, hey, man, pay for my lunch. I see you got food.
I feel like this has some parallels to the feast or whatever, where the guy sat himself at the table and then had to get moved. You know what I'm saying?
No. Don't seat yourself at the high place.
It would be better to walk up and say, hey, you guys are going on vacation? We were thinking about taking one.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you there.
Yeah, maybe we'll go. We can bring a trailer. Hey, here's the deal. Like, in my own experience, I only know this because this is the way my wife operates, but like, I mean, we've gone places with people that do pretty good. They make good money. But, like, she always offers us to bring the same amount of stuff and lets them talk us out of it. That's not her goal. I'm sitting I'm thinking in the back, like,
yeah.
I hope they talk us out of it.
Yeah, right.
We don't want to be that generous. I don't think we can afford that. But, like, she says, well, you know, we'll cover half the meat or we'll bring the meat and you bring the whatever. And I mean, because it would be embarrassing for someone to think otherwise. You know, that we were looking to freeload off of them. That is more embarrassing, and we don't want to take advantage of people's generosity. And so, like, I would be more embarrassed if they thought that of our family. And so it's odd that actually the frivolous couple isn't, like, overselling it and getting talked down.
I wonder if. So, as a matter of fact, I'm just as in my mind is ruling this over, I'm becoming more and more confident, is that this frivolous couple is not taking advantage of them like they say. The other couple is extremely passive-aggressive. Right? Like, to the extent that they have not said anything to date... I bet they're not saying they invite themselves. They're like, oh, hey, we'd like to go along too. And they're like, oh, yeah, you can do it. Because they simply do not know how to handle anything in the situation to be able to respond and push back on them. So they're basically getting stomped on, but they're permitting it. So that's my guess, is that they're shading the way that they're describing it. It's not really happening as bad as they think or as they're representing. But if they say it that way, it justifies a little bit of the behavior as opposed to taking some responsibility that says, yeah, they kind of asked if they could come along and we were too embarrassed or didn't know how to handle saying no. And so we just let them do that. And we think, well, they need to stop taking advantage of us. No, you need to grow up and have a conversation with someone when they say, hey, I'm coming about. You're like, well, you know, if you want to get in your own trailer and buy your own meals and end up in the same relative space we are, because like we're neighbors, so we're kind of used to that. So, you know, do what you want to do.
Hey, but I mean, how financially poor can they be if they have their own trailer?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I don't
true.
Think I know anybody point. That owns a trailer.
No, the trailers are at the extremes of society. People with absolutely no money seem to have come across trailers, and then see people that have big money have trailers. It's the middle ground folks that don't really have that stuff.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Yeah, it's a bunch of crap. I mean, I could take a small trailer and work my way up if that's the deal.
No, that's not how. In fact, you go by some of the dumpiest places ever, and they got like two. They got like an RV, they got a trailer that like...
Hey, man.
Maybe they got like five vehicles on the property.
People that don't have any money need to start selling those vehicles to people that do.
Actually, I thought of that. I've been kind of keeping an eye out for an RV, and I saw a real shanty one, and I said, hey, man, I wonder if I could just give that guy $500. But here's the deal. He knows exactly what's wrong with it, and it came from his grandpa, and he probably wants $2,000 more than what it's worth because it means something to him.
Yeah.
And so he ain't part. You can't even get a bargain from that guy. That's why he's got five vehicles.
I actually figured that out about people that are still driving like an old jalopy around. And I'm like, why don't you just get a new vehicle? But the truth of the matter is like their income only allows them to buy like a $1,000 vehicle. And they're like, I would rather be murdered by the wolf I know than the wolf I don't. You know what I'm saying? Like he's fixed the window regulator. He's put a carburetor on this thing. He knows when the fuel pump starts to act funny. You know, he knows that you got 3 days on the front right tire before you got to stop and fill it up again. And so, you going to trade that beast off or sell it out for another $1,000 mystery vehicle? No. They'll just stick with the jalopy they know and say, I know this beast by name. This is no problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's how people stay married. Go ahead.
Solid. Secular says, it's not wrong not to want to be taken advantage of. This wouldn't be happening if you had established some rules in the beginning, but it isn't too late to do it now. Call the wife, tell her what you expect her and her husband to bring on the next trip, and what chores they will be expected to perform. It isn't fair that you're doing all the work and paying for everything while they are on your vacation. They should provide or pay for half the groceries, half the gas, and share any housekeeping responsibilities. Ditto if you go to a restaurant. And the next time they tell you they are only coming with you, that they are coming with you on your vacation, don't hesitate or feel guilty when you reply, we'd like some privacy this time, so it will just be the two of us.
That seems like extremely, extremely weird way to handle it. Like, did he say that you haven't said anything up to this point, and all of a sudden you call him up and say, hey, I expect the following?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good way to introduce
you. You went from passive-aggressive to straight-up-aggressive.
Yeah.
I don't find a middle ground. I don't see any problem there. Actually, but here's the thing. I'm under the mind that, like, I would either pay for it all if I had the money and not really give it much thought, or say, look, we can't afford that. So,
and that's why you don't write in with this problem.
So you do what you want. You know, that's your call. You can follow us around. You can even stay in this camper if you want. But all four of us are spreading a Hunger Man meal. So if that's what you call a vacation, then I suppose you can come with us. But
I call the leg.
Me and the wife are going to split this one steak that we bought. And I don't know that I'm going to give you my quarter. It's not going
to
happen.
I'm going to say it like, for not having said anything up to this point, to then come up like... Like, you're stock full of ammo from all the times you didn't say anything, and that's not their fault.
Yeah.
You know, have it like it's the first time it's come up, because that's really, it is the first time it's come up. You didn't bother saying it before. That's not their problem.
Yeah, hey, our next vacation, how about we split it?
Yeah, or, hey, like, just assume they're going and say, look, you again, just take the meals. Or, hey, it gets a little crowded in our trailer. Why don't you take yours and we'll take ours?
I find that brutal honesty works pretty well in these situations. When people say, blah, 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 maybe we could come vacation with you. You say, no, I'm not really interested in that. They will be so taken aback by what appears to be a very rude statement, they won't ask you no more questions about it. You told them the truth. They got the point. You didn't drag it out for a couple days or have any him-haw conversations about it. You said, look, I'm not interested in going on vacation with you.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah, love. Say love after it if you want. That'll kind of smooth it over a little bit.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Again, you can sign up for the podcast. Well, you're on the podcast. Livefromthepath.org. Just check that stuff out. We got stuff to look at. And be faithful to means. Hey, listen to me. Listen to me. If you're making some sort of weird political choice, I don't assume you're in the Super Tuesday voting block, but here's the thing. Faithful in the means. You hear me? Faithful in the means. Don't prescribe the ends. God will handle those. You've been listening to Live from the Path.